Okay. Okay, good morning. We begin a new Sefer, Sefer Shmuel Aleph. And with God's help, we will be able to finish it like we finished Sefer Shoftim. It'll take much longer, because we're only learning it half the time, and it's a longer book. But God willing, there'll be a lot of interesting things. Now let's begin in Pasuk Aleph. Vayehi ish echad. The literal translation will mean there was one man, min haramasayim, from a place called Ramasayim, which the commentaries say very simply, a place where there were two mountains, one opposite the other. Tzofim, called Tzofim. Tzofim literally means to be a scout. Mehar Ephraim, from the area of Har Ephraim, from Mount Ephraim. Ushmal Elkanah, his name is Elkanah. Ben Yerocham, the son of Yerocham. Ben Elihu, the son of Elihu. Ben Tohu, the son of Tohu. Ben Tzuf, the son of Tzuf. Ephrasi and Ephrasi. So, a lot of questions here. If he's from Har Ephraim, he's obviously an Ephrasi. That's one point. But let's see what the Malbim and the other Mephorshim explain over here. On the word Ish Echad, the Malbim says, there's a big difference if someone is referred to as Vayihi Ish, there was a man, as opposed to Vayihi Ish Echad, and there was one man. Big difference between the two. You may recall in Sefer Shoftim, a few times it says Vayihi Ish. There was an Ish from Har Ephraim, but not an Ish Echad. It said it twice in Sefer Shoftim, Perek Yud Zayin. And then it says, Vayihi Ish Levi, there was a man Levi. And those people were involved in the Pesel Micha, the idol that Micha made. As opposed to where it also says, it says, Vayihi Ish Echad, where when it says Ish Echad, it's teaching us that it's a very unique person who is designated for greatness. As the Midrash Rabbah tells us this, and you, when there's a reference to Manoach, it's called Vayihi Ish Echad, Mitzira. There was a man, one Ish Echad, and he was the one to be the father of Shimshon. So as well here, when it says Vayihi Ish Echad, is someone who's very special, who's going to have a child, Shmuel. So we're talking about a very special person over here, a very unique type of person. And he was from Ramasayim Tzofim. So what does Tzofim mean? So the Targum Yonasan explains someone who was a student of the Nevi'im. And the Radak as well tells us this, that you can explain Tzofim as Nevi'im, because Tzofim also means like to see, to really see far into the distance. And that's what a Navi's all about. So, and the Radak learns when it says Min, that he's from Min HaRamasayim Tzofim Mehar Ephraim. It's like he's saying he's from Ramasayim, and also from a family of Tzofim. From a family of Tzofim. And the Rabbag, and the truth of the matter is, the Radak tells us very interestingly, and this is something we all know, we just have to put two and two together, from a family of prophets, because he was from the descendants of Korach. Alright? Descendant of Korach. As his Yichus is described in Divrei HaYomim, it says the Ubnei, and we know the children of Korach were prophets. And they were Osir, Elkanah, and Avi Yosef. And that was, so you have the word, Elkanah was a child of Korach. So the descendants, after a number of generations, they named after the previous ancestors. So Elkanah was named, after great Zaidi, Elkanah as well. And so, and we know that Shmuel was a Levi as well. So, the This we what is one of the Shir Shal Yom of today is? Start the Shir Shal Yom for today. Mizmor Shir Libnei Korach. Every Monday, this is the psalm for the Bnei Korach. They made up to a parak in Tehillim. They must be Nevim. Right, so it's a good thing we're starting today. We're learning about the descendant of the Bnei Korach. This was Korach's fatal mistake. Korach's fatal mistake to challenge Moshe, because Korach also had shtickle prophecy. He said, there's no way I can lose, because I know I'm descendant of someone that will be even greater than Moshe and Aaron together. As we say, Friday night davening in Kabbalah Shabbos, the Moshe Aaron, amongst those who call their name, and Shmuel, is equal to all of them. So clearly, he saw something. He didn't quite see it correctly, but he saw he would have a great descendant that would equal Moshe and Aaron, and we'll discuss where that comes into play. But he didn't realize that, so how can I die? How can I die? The answer is, you'll die, but your children will live. So the children must have been great people, as we know. It was a great challenge. Your father goes up against the greatest leaders of the Jewish people, and to not take your father's side is a very, you have to be a very strong person to go against the grain. So they had it within them. In the last moment, they did tshuva, and Hashem saved their lives. So we'll see that they are merited. Is that very same Elkanah? Asir Elkanah Navi Yosef. So the very same Elkanah would have a number of generations later a descendant that would be named after him that would do a similar thing, as we will see in this story, that Elkanah has to go against the public opinion of apathy of not going to Shiloh, as we'll see very shortly. So you'll see that the Korach gets nachas from his descendants, but it's not exactly the way we would have liked to have seen it. Korach himself gets swallowed up, but his son Elkanah is amongst those who do tshuva, and then a descendant later on is named Elkanah as well. So that's an interesting thing to keep in mind. The Ralbag tells us that Sofim was a city of Levites. In other words, the Levites didn't have a particular place to live, the Levim, and they would have different cities throughout Eretz Yisrael. So in the tribe of Ephraim, by the mountain of Ephraim, there was a Levite city named Sofim, and it would make a lot of sense, because if you look, keep going back four generations, Elkanah, the son of Yerocham, Eliyahu, Ben Tohu, Ben Tzuf. So it's a family, a descendant of Tzuf. So the city was called Sofim. So now I just have a little bit of the history over here, who we're dealing with over here. So we have Elkanah, who is from a family of prophets. He is a Levite. He's living in Har Ephraim, which is not that far from Shiloh. So we'll see exactly what's going on in that aspect. And this is the person that we're dealing with over here. The Ralbag adds one more thing. As we all recall, Sefer Shoftim ended with a very nasty story with a Levite, right? There was an Ish Levi who chopped up his Pilegesh, and because of him, he caused over 70,000 people to die. There was an Ish Levi that was from Ephraim who caused over 70,000 people to die. So you think, boy, those Levim are a bunch of rotten stinkers, and they cause all these kinds of problems. But you're going to now see, in contrast, a very wonderful Levite who also lived in Ephraim and was able to do tremendous things, as we will see. He's called an Ephrasi. Why do we have to call him an Ephrasi, even though he's from Har Ephraim? So we learned already in Sefer Shoftim that an Ephrasi is also a code word for someone who's very difficult, who's very meticulous in watching himself in not falling into licentious behavior. That he is very careful with Arayas, very moral type of person, and that's really what Ephraim was supposed to represent as the main descendant of Yosef, who was careful to guard himself from Arayas, from immorality. So, there's a lot to be said about him, and this will also be in contradistinction to the leadership of this time. We will learn a little bit later on that who is in charge, it was Eli. Eli was the high priest. He had two children, Hophni and Pinchas, who were not the most moral people, as we will see. And because they weren't the most moral people, that is why the Jewish people refrained from participating in the obligation 3 times a year to be Ola Regal, to visit the holy city. Now, Yerushalayim was not yet determined as the holy city. Right now, the holy city was Shiloh. That was the holy city where the Mishkan was. And the Jews had an obligation 3 times a year to go and see Hashem and to celebrate the holidays in Shiloh. And we were told it was not very popular for Jews to go there. And we'll see one of the main reasons, there are a number of reasons, but a very primary reason is that the leaders in Shiloh, Hophni and Pinchas, were not exactly role models of leadership. And we'll see and discuss where there's issues of immorality there. So if the leadership is not up to par, certainly people don't want to visit there. So as opposed to that kind of leadership, we have Elkanah, who's an Ephrasi, which is a code word for someone who's very particular to restrain himself in areas of immorality. Okay, so now we have a little bit of a description of who this Elkanah is, and who will be the ultimate father of Shmuel Hanavi. And in Pasuk Beis, we'll now be introduced to his mother. Velo, and this man had Shtei Nashim, 2 wives. Shem Achas Chana, the name of one of them, interesting, it doesn't say Shem Ha'achas Chana, not the name of the one or the first, but Shem Achas Chana, we'll discuss that, was Chana. V'shem Hashenis Penina. And the second one is called Penina. V'yehi v'pnima yelodim, and Penina had children, boys, ulechana ein yelodim, and Chana did not have any children. So the Malbim says something very fascinating. So first he notes, it doesn't say by both of them the Hey Hayidia. It doesn't say that the first was Shem Ha'achas. And really it should say what? Shem HaRishon, the first one. It says the name of one was Chana. And the name of the second one was Penina. So that should really tell you there's something unusual over there. So, the mom explains, because who did he marry first? Chana. When he married Chana, it means there was one wife. So it was Shem Ha'achas, the name of one. There was only one. There was a period of time where Elkanah was only married to Chana. Finished. One wife, and that was it. So now the Malbim goes on to explain, so who did he marry? Then he married Penina second. And now he says this makes sense with the words of the rabbis, that when Chana saw she couldn't have any children, she gave advice to her husband to take on a second wife. This is a repeat of the Sarah Hagar story. When Avram and Sarah could not have children, Sarah insisted that Avram marry Hagar in the merit of the kindness of enabling another person in the world to have children. Hashem would, she said, I will be built up through her, and in that merit, I will have a child. And we know in the Hagar-Sar relationship, it was not a very pleasant relationship, as we all know. What happens? Hagar gets pregnant. She has the child. She begins to feel she's more important than Sarah, and all the stories that came out of that. So the same thing is going on as well over here, that Chana tells Elkanah to get another wife. He picks Penina. Penina has the children, and Chana does not. Okay. The truth is, even Sarah had to wait a good while. Had to wait 14 years till she had a child. So and it looked like maybe it didn't work either. So it plays out as well. Now, of course, we know this is a very special Haftarah. What we're going to learn this prayer is a very special Haftarah. When do we read this Haftarah? That says there.
I'm not going to answer.
Anybody else? When do we read this Haftarah? Yeah, I think you even have said it once in a while, Jovi. On Rosh Hashanah. What? Looks familiar. You say it on Rosh Hashanah. Okay. And obviously, you can understand why. I mean, you see that Hashem decides important things in our lives, and here is a whole issue of having... Yeah, usually, I tell you, Jovi, it's a long haftarah, and I tell you you have to go fast. When we're running late, and I tell you you have to go fast. And you say, this is not the haftarah, I have to go fast. We read about Sarah and having a child as well. The first day of Rosh Hashanah, we learn about kicking out Yishmael. Right? And the second day we read about Sarah having the baby. And then, we read this, I believe the first day of Rosh Hashanah as well. And then there's another Haftarah, of Rachel, Mavaka, whatever. But clearly it's all Rosh Hashanah type of stuff, because very emotional, very serious issues, and they dovetail each other in great ways. Okay. So now we know the husband, now we know the wife. This is usually when a great person is born. Parents don't have children for a while. They have to work on themselves a lot. People who don't have children, they get very sad that they don't have any children. But quite often Hashem is preparing these people to work on themselves in deep and great ways, that they become the great people that they are, to be able to give birth to a child who will be such a great child, as indeed Shmuel becomes. Okay, now, so we know Elkanah, we know the main characters here, we know Chana, his primary wife, Penina, which is no Pilegesh, certainly no Pilegesh, but obviously not the wife of his love, Penina with all the children. So now we're told about something that Elkanah does that's very special, that will be one of the reasons why he merits to have a child. Pasuk Gimel. And this man would ascend. It's interesting, how could he be ascending if he already lives by mountaintops? So I guess we have to say, existentially, he ascended. He ascended about beyond everyone else in levels, as we'll see why. And he goes from his city, miyamim yamim ma, from days to days. So what does that mean, from days to days? Also, we need to know, what is it? Why do we have to call the guy Ha'ishahu? We already know who we're talking about. We're talking about Elkanah. We mentioned as wives. So we could say, Ve'olo Ha'ish. And the man would go. There's no other man been introduced in the story yet. Why do we have to say Ha'ish Hahu? So the Malbim learns, very interestingly, Ha'ishahu. So he says, from this city, he was the only one who would go and visit Shiloh. He says, "Lo ola shum ish l'Shiloh rak ha'ishahu ha'ya'ola." He was the only guy who would go from time to time, from day to day. So again, the Mefarshim explained, you know, the simple meaning would be from holiday to holiday. Whenever the holiday came, Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, he'd go from holiday to holiday. He would go and he would take his family with him, as well, all his family members, and he would go lihishtachavos v'lizboach l'Hashem tzvakos b'Shiloh, to bow down and bring offerings to Hashem tzvakos. Now, this is very interesting. This is the first time, really, in the context of a story. Really, it's the first time Hashem, the name of Hashem, in terms of being Hashem tzvakos. That's why I'm not pronouncing it, because it's one of Hashem's name. But that means, literally it means the word, the Lord of hosts. I always hear this word, the Lord of hosts. So who are the hosts? Right? So hopefully by either today or tomorrow we'll get to the bottom of who is the Lord of hosts. It's because I have the hosts of, I guess, the angelic realm. There's a host of angels up in heaven, and Hashem is the leader of all those hosts. We'll discuss this more a little bit later on. But there, it's very interesting. There's a referencing of Hashem as Hashem Tzvakos. And he's always, you know, called Hashem Tzvakos. It's not just Tzvakos. He's going to say, well, you know, he prayed to Tzvakos. So it's Hashem Tzvakos. You have two names of God. You have the name of Hashem and the name of Tzvakos. So we'll have to see what that's all about. B'Shiloh in Shiloh. And now the Malbim says, now why do you think he's the only guy going? Visham Shnei Bnei Eli, and over there are the two sons of Eli, Chofni Ufinchas. Chofni and Pinchas, not to be mistakenly, it's not the Pinchas that we know until now. The Pinchas who became the Kohen Gadol in the times of Moshe and Aaron, became a Kohen and subsequently Kohen Gadol. The enigmatic Pinchas throughout the book of Shoftim who pops in and pops out. All right. It's not, even though he's a Kohen also, right? Same name as the famous Pinchas, but not anywhere close in stature to that person. Who are Kohanim Lashem, who are Kohanim Tashem. So the Malbim says, yeah, the reason he was the only guy who went from his city, and there were very few people who would want to go to Shiloh, is because this type of chevra of guys who were running the show were not the best people at all. So therefore, you know, he was the only guy, and it was a very difficult thing for that to happen. The Malbim explains as well, what's this idea of lihishtach avos v'lizboach? To bow down and to give offerings. And we'll see later on at the end of the perek, we'll talk again about them going, it says only Lizboach. If you look at the end of this perek, in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, after she has the son, it says that Elkanah went up and his family, Lizboach Lashem, to bring an offering, and there's no idea Lishtachavos, and to bow down. So, obviously, what are you bowing down for? So, bowing down is quite often referenced to prayer. So, the idea being, they would go up, lishtachavos, to pray, and obviously, what are they praying for? They're praying for Chana to have a child, and that was the way in those days. If you prayed, you bowed down to Hashem. And then it says, to bring an offering to Hashem, Tzvakos. Okay. So, here we're using the name of Tzvakos, as we'll see, the Gemara in Brachas says, and this we'll talk a bit later on, the content of Chana's prayers, we'll bring down from the Radak, we'll bring down from the Gemara. Chana says, she says, Mikol tzvakei tzvakos shebaras balemcha. Of all the hosts of the world that you, in the world, is it so hard for you to give me another child? So she uses the term in her prayers to call Hashem, Hashem tzvakos, and we'll say it's very, very significant, this name change of Hashem. But be that as may, just keep that in mind. But obviously, there were a lot of these visits. You can imagine every year they're going, not every year, even three times a year. Their mom is praying to Hashem, please give us a child, give us a child. And then they'll bring an offering. So, you know, it's very interesting. You know, she wasn't given a child. And even though there were children from Penina, but Penina was not the object of Elkanah's true love. So the real wife that he loved was Chana, and there was no child. So you can understand, you know, you could see how bitter people would be if they don't have children, and they get angry at Hashem. Quite often, people don't get what they want from Hashem. They get very angry at Hashem. How come I don't have this? So the first thing you do when you're angry at Hashem is you don't go to Shiloh. It's already a good enough excuse not to go to Shiloh. Nobody from your city is going to Shiloh already because of Chofni and Pinchas. Ugh, what kind of leaders are there in Shiloh? It's a mockery of everything that's going on. And now Hashem, look how Hashem treats me. I'm a good guy. You don't give me any children. You should be upset with Hashem. And say, I don't got nothing to say to Hashem. So not only do they go, but they go while nobody else is going. You know, so it's very interesting there. It's almost as if they're sensitive to Hashem's feelings. Nobody's going. Somebody has to go. And we'll see in a second. They didn't stop, just go. So, like, they mamish went to the extreme in going to do this mitzvah of aliyah l'regel. Again, you could say alos also means it's aliyah l'regel. Every time you go, it's an aliyah for your neshama to go to Eretz, to go to the holy place. But you see, in spite of all the reasons that they would have to be angry at Hashem, they go out of their way to fulfill the mitzvah of coming close to Hashem. To the one that they could blame for all their trouble, They come bedavka. The whole idea of aliyah l'regel to go visit the holy place is to be seen by Hashem and to get close to Hashem. To getting close to the God that isn't giving them a child. So obviously they're people on very high levels to say that we really have to do what the mitzvahs are required no matter how difficult it is. We go to this very Hashem that is holding children back from us. To show that the response to when Hashem doesn't do what you want isn't to be angry at him. The response is, Hashem, As we've said many times, the Gemara says, why did Hashem withhold prayer from the children, from the matriarchs? Why were the matriarchs all barren? They're all barren because Hashem isavel et tfilos and shel tzaddikim. Hashem lusts for the prayers of the righteous. Because all the good that comes into the world through the prayers of tzaddikim, a tzaddik prays, it brings so much blessing into the world. So sometimes Hashem has to push the tzaddikim to pray very hard for deep needs and to feel everybody else's pain. So certainly Elkanah and Hannah were feeling this pain. And we'll discuss more. We're going to bring from the Nefesh HaChaim. Nefesh HaChaim was one who was in the running to be one of the courses we were going to learn. So, but we'll sneak it in. We'll have to learn a few pages because he talks a lot about Hannah's prayers in the second parak. So we'll sneak in a little bit of Nefesh HaChaim as well. So if you have your English Nefesh HaChaims, you can bring it and we could look at it for a few pages. But you see that the unbelievable avodas Hashem they did. They served Hashem under very difficult circumstances. So now what I want to spend a bit of time now, and I don't have any more copies of the book, from Mezakeh Sarabim, small little sefer, Mezakeh Sarabim. Okay. Part of a larger book called Madregas Ha'odom, written by the author of Navardik, Rabbi Yoizel Horowitz. And in that big book, there's a small section called Mezakeh HaRabim, which the English here of Feldheim translates as to turn the many to righteousness. Mezakeh, to bring merit to the Rabim, to the masses. And there he discusses the importance, and this was written over 100 years ago, This in Europe, Navardik, there was a whole system. This is second generation of the Musar dynasties from Yisrael Salanter, and they work on humility of self. And Navardik set up a network of yeshivas throughout Europe of this style. And so this little work discusses the importance of kiruv. So I'm going to read to you Perek Zion, chapter 7. I'll read it in English. It'll take a while, but it's very important. Very important. And we'll hear what the altar has to say. There's a number of questions he asks in the first chapter of the book. Number of questions. Is it possible to do Kiruv? Should one spend his time doing Kiruv? All these things. Kiruv is outreach. Reaching out to Jews who are not on the level that they should be at. There was needs for Kiruv in the times of Sefer Shmuel. Because remember, it's coming after Sefer Shoftim. And the end of Shoftim was not so good. Or the whole period wasn't the greatest. Everyone did like as they saw Isha Yosher Be'enov.
Yes.
Everyone did it and it was good in his eyes. That's exactly what this generation's all about. You know, you have to be politically correct because everybody does what's good. You're good, you're good. Everybody does what's good. In their eyes. That's all. But really, it's not so good. It's not good in the eyes of Hashem. So there was a great need to do Kiruv then. And Rabbi Yoizel, 100 years ago, felt there was an important need to do Kiruv in his time. So things haven't changed much. Maybe things are a little more desperate now. But then again, it's pretty desperate if nobody's going to Shiloh. And you got Eretz Yisrael. Well, let's think about it. You got Eretz Yisrael. Wasn't that long after the great miracles to get into it at all. You mamash have Shiloh, you mamash have the Mishkan, you've got the presence of Hashem. I'm not going. And so many Jews weren't going to Shiloh. Kohenim Avim, he was the only guy from his city that went. That was a city of Levites. So we'll see how Rabbi Yoizel explains. There's in the commentaries, there's different Chazal. But Imamish goes into expanded detail. He does this expanded thinking like similar to how the Piazetzer Rebbe says when you go to a store, you have to elaborate on your own of what was going on. So he goes through great detail on this issue. Yeah, good question.
I was going to say, what went on at Shiloh? Was it exactly the same as what
it Shiloh was the Mishkan. The Mishkan was in Shiloh. It was like
it was
a base.
Exactly the same as the Mishkan.
It was. It wasn't exactly the same. It was the Mishkan.
All right.
And you did avoda there. You brought the Korban Tamid every day. Everything you're learning about in Sefer Vayikra. It was in the 40 years in the desert. Then when they came to, there was Gilgal, and then it moved on to Shiloh. It was in Shiloh for over 300 years. That was the spot. And we saw in Shoftim already, they congregated in Shiloh. Shiloh was like Yerushalayim, almost. That was the central part where all Jews had to meet. Hundreds of thousands of Jews were meant to be there. Okay. So this... Where Mishkan will have to wait a few prakim. The Mishkan never got destroyed. We'll see. We'll get to the plishtim. It's coming up in a couple chapters. We'll see. So let me read. I know sometimes it's not interesting to hear reading, but it's so powerful. It's a shame. It's like small pages. So to start photocopying, you got to make a million pages. So I was trying to see if I could have downloaded something written out, but it's copyrighted, so you can't get a hold of it. So anyway, let's just read a little bit. He says, as to the question of whether the individual is capable of exerting his influence upon society unaided by any spectacular devices, but by the genuineness of his life alone. In other words, the question is it possible for an individual to have an influence upon a society without any other external help, like, you know, a bankroll of $50 million, you know? A good PR agency. Sounds like our shul, huh? Okay, many others. Right? But just by the genuineness of his life alone, his genuineness is able to accomplish this. Right? He says, Ki'im b'chayov ha'amitiyim. With just l'shem shemayim. Can you accomplish something just l'shem shemayim? He says, consideration of a tangible instance presented by our sages of blessed memory will excite our wonderment at the existence of just such a possibility. Yes, this is what the first few psukim in Sefer Shmuel are all about. It's the primary message of the first few psukim of Sefer Shmuel. Now he quotes what we just learned. Elkanah would make the pilgrimage to Shiloh with his wife, sons, sisters, and all of it. He's quoting a medrash. It's elaborating on what the psukim said. And all of his relatives spending the night in the streets of the cities along the way. As they were ole regel. They didn't park in the Giva Hilton. You know, they would just, they'd sit in the streets, sleep overnight in the streets. And when the townspeople noticing them would ask, where are you going? They would answer to the house of the Lord in Shiloh, whence emanates Torah and mitzvahs. And then he would add in his response, why don't you join us and we will go together? Right? So at this point, the townspeople began to shed tears and asked, may we go with you? To which he answered, yes. Okay. The following year, five families would join. The following year. So what about the first year? It seems that not too many people joined the first year.
Oh, they hope they
have to make
plans.
You know, right? Yes, we weren't ready, and this and that. We just can't go on a dime like this. But you see, very few people joined the first year he went. And you'd figure that Elkanah would have been greatly disappointed by such small numbers. But what did he accomplish in the first year? No, it says they were crying. He got them to cry. See, he's trying to do kiruv. Can you imagine? A yid doesn't go to Yerushalayim, to Shiloh. So it's a terrible avera. It's a terrible avera. That's like, you know, almost. I guess, are there any Jews who don't go to high holiday services?
Yes.
A couple, you know, to come there, to be there three times a year. Do you know any Jews who don't go to high holiday services? It's their Shiloh, isn't it? So he saw people weren't going to high holiday tickets were slow in Shiloh's. Wasn't going. So he had to get them to go. So what is it? He goes in the street, right? And they say, oh, what are you doing? I'm going to high holiday services. He says, oh. He says, why don't you come with us? Oh, they start crying. I remember my Zaidi used to go to high holiday services. He used to take him as a little child. But we don't do high holidays anymore. We don't do that.
Just the meals.
Yeah, just the meals. We'll have a good meal here. We'll have a Seder. But we're not going to go, right? But so, and the guy would feel terrible. What a failure he was. Nobody went. But they cried. So crying itself is also good. The following year, five families would join. The year after, 10. Until eventually all of them made the pilgrimage. Eventually got everybody after a number of years. The Holy One blessed be thereban said to Elkanah, you have turned the balance for Israel to the side of merit. It's all a Yalkut on this here. You have instructed them in mitzvos, and many have been rendered worthy because of you. Therefore I shall cause a son to issue from you who shall turn the balance for Israel to the side of merit, and who shall instruct them in mitzvos. Whence we derive that the reward of Elkanah is Shmuel. Okay, so you see one thing for sure. A person involved in Kiruv has a big merit to have religious children who will be community leaders. There are many people who were worried when great Gedolim in the 1950s and 60s told their students to go out into the small cities of North America to help build up Torah in small little cities. And they would ask Rav Aaron Cutler, Zatzal, and other great rabbis, what's going to be with our children? So he says, I promise you, it's not just them, I promise your children will stay on the derech. Your children will stay observant people, even though you're coming into a city that's not observant. And by and large, that if they listen to everything the Rosh Hashiva said, their children were observant. So you see the same thing over here, that he merited to have a child, Shmuel. And it's a big schus. They weren't able to have children, and he had a child. It's not a small thing. You have to work for to reach out to other Jews. This is all the Yalkut. So far, the altar hasn't said anything. He asked the question. He says, here's an example. And it's all a quote out of the Yalkut. Now he's going to analyze the Yalkut. He's going to analyze the Yalkut. When we look into the matter, we are astonished at the extent to which one individual was responsible for this transformation, whereby a mitzvah which had fallen into neglect and had almost been forgotten became an all-pervasive source of vitality. How difficult it is to turn a man's heart to the unconventional, especially when it involves an expenditure of effort and even more self-sacrifice. Being all the regal was not an easy job. Well, how'd you like to spend your vacation in yeshiva? Go to Shiloh. It was not exactly a hot tourist spot. Okay. It's a big thing to schlep and all this. And if this is difficult in respect to one man, how much more so in respect to a group of men? A city, an entire country didn't want to go. And when we consider the unconventionality of the pilgrimage to Shiloh, and the exertion and self-sacrifice demanded by it, not merely of an individual or of one city, but of an entire country, how impossible does it seem? Okay. So, unbelievable. Yet who is it that wrought justice? Very fancy English. Who did this? One votary. I'm sure the Hebrew's not votary. Oved Echad. One servant. By the name of Elkanah. We see the power of the individual to be so great then as to restore the crown to its former glory in the entire world. So number one, you see that one person can do a lot. That's number one. Of course, you have to have your family behind you. You see, he didn't go by himself. He went with his family, his sisters, his children, his wives. So you have to have a good family that's supportive of your Kiruv efforts. If he went alone, it probably wouldn't have been so. People say, look, Mamashi went, he took his wife, he took his little kids, he took everybody. Even though children are not obliged, you don't have to bring your children, they're not chayiv and all the other regal. He brought everybody. Women aren't chayiv. Women aren't obliged to go. He brought his wives, his sisters, everybody. All ones who don't have to go, he even brings. Looking further into the matter, we are moved to ask, where did his strength lie? What devices did he employ? What group did he form? What honorific titles did he confer? What positions and ranks did he allocate? What manner of publicity did he resort to? What assemblies did he convoke to herald this cause? In the face of all these questions, Our sages of blessed memory tell us that he formed no groups and conferred no honors or monetary rewards and convoked no assemblies, but wrought all this through the example of his life, of his deeds, of his allegiance to Torah. He role modeled it. This was evident to all, and they were drawn to him like iron to a lodestone, like to a magnet. But having adopted the policy of, quote, complete commitment of oneself and one's family to the fulfillment of Torah, unquote, he exerted an influence upon all men. As our sages of blessed memory tell us, when he and his family passed through a city, they did not seek lodging, but spent the night in the street with the intent of sanctifying the name of God. You see over here, the value of shock. It's shocking to see a man and his whole family sitting out on the streets. Right? As you know, remember there's the Medrash with Yossi ben Yoezer, and his uncle, his nephew was a heretic, and the whole story where he was being the holy uncle was being led to his final death because he went against the Romans for teaching Torah. The whole story, and the nephew said, and the nephew went off the derech, was also riding on a horse, and he looks at his uncle as being going to be sent to death while he went off Yiddishkeit, and he's getting all these honors. He says, "Uncle, look what's happening to you. Look what's happening to my horse and your horse." So he says, "Well, you can imagine, I do the will of Hashem. You don't do the will of Hashem. Look what you get. Can you imagine what I'm going to get in the world to come?" Which kind of shocked his nephew. What kind of statement that he says, "But no one is a bigger tzaddik than you, and look what's happening to you." So he shocked his senses to say, "What do you mean? What do you have going for you?" So once he shocked him, then he set him up. Then he said, "Yeah, can you imagine? No one's better than me. Look what's happening to me. Can you imagine what's going to happen to you?" Boom. And then the nephew said, "That's terrible." And then the nephew himself did amazing tshuva, and he took his own life and gave himself the 4 death penalties. So there's a value of shock therapy. You can imagine Elkanah goes with his whole family, he's sleeping in the street. People look at what's going on over here. They got to check out what kind of guy is sleeping in the street. What's this guy being so moser nefesh for? Maybe he's going to Aurelia to go to the casinos. Yeah, Stama, to be moser nefesh, go to the casino. People, mamish, what they invest all their money to go to vacation spots. People probably were meiser nefesh. They're stranded in England now. They can't travel because of the volcano. Mamish being meiser nefesh to go to these places. He says, "Where are you being meiser nefesh for? Your mamish self-sacrificing." "It's for my Yiddishkeit." It's a shock. Right? They were wondering, what's he going? So the reply came, so we're not going to finish, just one more line. So the reply came back with strength and pride to the house of the Lord in Shiloh. After which Elkanah would go to the men and the members of his family, to the women, and they would reprove them with words that entered into the very marrow of their minds. He'd say, "And you, why don't you come with us? You have forsaken the well of living waters, the house of the Lord in Shiloh, and bartered it for the timbrel, harp, and fife, and for the wine of their festivities. You're interested in the meal, the Passover meal, but you don't want to come?" They then put them in mind of their former high estate and the evil ways into which they had fallen, until they all burst into tears and asked, "May we come with you?" And the answer came, "Yes." When they came to the next city, their number was greater, probably in the second year, which impelled many to join them. Eventually, the next year, he had a group that went with them. Until the course of time, all of them made the pilgrimage. And in this way, Elkanah restored the crown to its former glory. For when the others witnessed his self-sacrifice and the complete consecration of himself and his family to the pilgrimage, they were all astounded and followed him, so that he led all of them from the snare of sin made permissible by repetition to a great light, and the merit of all is accredited to him. All right, we'll have to finish this tomorrow, but certainly a very inspiring start to the book of Shmuel. Every regal.